In this volume, Dr. Chopra reveals how the body has its own innate pharmacy. Consequently, it has an amazing ability to naturally create all of the healing agents that it needs. In order to initiate this phenomenon, however, it has to be in its natural balance. This inner balance can be created with the aid of our senses through sound, smell, touch, sight, and taste therapies. Dr. Chopra provides you with specific sound, smell, and touch therapies to aid you in creating harmonious body alignment. He gives additional information on the three doshas or body types and what each specifically require in order to create the balance necessary to produce the magical elements of its natural healing pharmacy.
I want to begin to introduce you to some Ayurvedic concepts that allow us to access the inner pharmacy. Our bodies, in fact, are wonderful pharmacies, and they make wonderful drugs. The human body can make everything: antibiotics, immunomodulators, tranquilizers, sleeping pills, you name it, the human body can make it in the right dose, at the right time, for the right organ. There are no side effects, and all the instructions come with the packaging. So we want to see how we can access that, and in order to do that, we have to understand some very simple, basic concepts that come from this great tradition of healing, which is known as Ayurveda. The word Ayurveda has two components to it: Ayus, which means life, and Veda, which means knowledge. So Ayurveda means knowledge of life. And according to Ayurveda, the human body is a microcosm of the universe. It's a hologram of the universe. We discussed that. And holographic descriptions are found not only in Ayurveda, but in all the traditions of the world. They are found in the insights of great visionary poets. William Blake, in one of his poems, says, "To see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, eternity in an hour." That's a holographic description of the universe. In Vedic literature, one comes across a little aphorism or sutra, and it says, "In Indra's heaven, there's a set of pearls so contained that if you pick up one of them, you'll see all of them." And then the sutra goes on to say, "This one is all." Again, a holographic description of the universe. A very basic aphorism in Ayurveda, in Sanskrit, is "Yatha pinde tatha brahmande," which means, as is the atom, so is the universe. As is the microcosm, so is the macrocosm. As is the human body, so is the cosmic body. As is the human mind, so is the cosmic mind. And if you don't like the word cosmic mind, you can call it a non-local field of information with self-referral cybernetic loops. And if you don't like the word soul, you can call it a continuum of probability amplitudes for space-time events in a field of infinite possibilities. But we're just relabeling everything, that's all. The same insights, and these are ancient insights. They have been part of the perennial philosophy and the spiritual tradition of every culture. They're not particularly unique to the East or to India. So all these philosophies, all these spiritual traditions have said more or less the same thing. Consciousness is the ultimate ground of creation, and as consciousness moves within itself, it conceives, governs, constructs, and becomes. Consciousness conceives, governs, constructs, and becomes the world of form and phenomenon. Consciousness by itself is a silent field of infinite possibilities. It is the potentiality for creation. It is the source of creation. The mind is the process of creativity. And the body and the universe are that which is created. But again, if you've understood all this, I've been saying the same thing in different ways. Observer, process of observation, and observed. Now I'm saying creator, process of creation, and created. They're all the same thing. So how does that mechanics occur? According to Ayurveda, consciousness, which is a field of infinite possibilities and infinite bliss and infinite silence and infinite flexibility and infinite creativity, it gets restless. It begins to move within itself. And as it begins to move within itself, then the disturbance in consciousness, it creates, out of the silence, it creates sound. The sound is the first manifestation of consciousness. And this sound is called primordial sound. Why? Because it is primordial. It's right in the beginning. You've heard the expression, in the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was made into flesh. But what's a word? A word is a sound in consciousness. It's a disturbance in the silence, as the silence interacts within its own self. The primordial sound has two components to it, and in Sanskrit, in ancient Sanskrit, these two components are known as Shruti and Smriti. The word Shruti means that which is heard. You hear words, you hear sounds in your consciousness. Smriti, that which is remembered. If I hear the word mother in my consciousness, there are two components to it. Mother, which is a sound, and then the meaning in that sound. Mother has a meaning, the memory of that sound. So Shruti is that which is heard, Smriti is that which is remembered. And every word that is heard in consciousness has those two components, the sound and the memory. The sound is energy and the memory is information. And I already said that consciousness manifests through two components, energy and information. And every sound that we hear as word in our consciousness, in any language, has common origins, which means linguistically structured, verbally elite thought is a very late evolutionary development in the human nervous system. In its primordial state, all thought is just Shruti and Smriti, sound and meaning, memory. And as you trace the roots of words in different languages, irrespective of what the language is, as you trace the roots of words in different languages, which a certain category of scientist does, that category of scientist is known as a paleolinguistic anthropologist. Paleolinguistic anthropologists study the origins of words. They find that all words come from common sounds. And these sounds, in a sense, are the roots of these words. And the roots are common to all languages. I just used the word mother right now. Mother in Hindi, in Indian language, is Mata. In Latin, it is Mater. In Greek, it's matrix, but it's also the origin of words like meter, music, time, measurement, matrika, which means the mother of the alphabet. So you see, that same word is giving rise, that same sound is giving rise to so many different words that are all related. They all relate to the one idea, womb, the womb of creation. Similarly, if you look at divine in Sanskrit or Hindi, it's deva or devata. But it also is the origin of the word diabolical or devil. The devil is just the divine that's ill, not feeling well. Devil, right? Pleasure, pain, cold, kaldas, scalding, hot, they're all related. The origins of words are sounds that encompass the poles of opposite of meaning. And it's the poles of opposite of meaning that make life a experience by contrast. Because if there wasn't contrast, there wouldn't be any experience. Consciousness by itself, the source, the creator, being everything, is a field of, in a sense, everything, but only in potentiality, before the creation. And once creation starts occurring, then you have these poles of opposite created. Light and darkness, up and down, hot and cold, pleasure and pain, divine and diabolical, etc. That's what makes life meaningful. So sound is the first manifestation in consciousness. The second manifestation of creativity is when sound gets precipitated into form. Sound gets precipitated into form. The vibration or the frequency freezes into matter. Incidentally, even the word matter has the same origin as mother. Matter, matrix, matra, matrika. Matter comes from the same place, as the same womb of creation. So when sound gets precipitated into matter, and we know that it does, the word becomes the flesh, the thought becomes the neuropeptide, then we experience that as emotion. We experience sound as thought. I had this thought. We always say, I had this thought. But actually, it would be truer to say, I heard the thought. We hear it. When we say emotion, we don't say, I had the thought. What do we say? I felt the emotion. Why do we feel the emotion? Because now, it's not just a sound in consciousness, it's a feeling in the body. It's a sensation in the body. And being a sensation in the body, it's a molecule in the body as well. The word has become the flesh. A thought is linked to a sensation. And when the thought and the sensation are together, that's an emotion. I had this thought, I felt the emotion. So out of sound comes touch. Why? Because you feel this. It's a feeling of touching. You touch your emotions. In fact, when we refer to our emotions, that's what we say. I was so touched by what you said. We are touched somewhere, internally. Out of sound and touch and the friction that creates internally in the world of consciousness is generated fire or light. And that's the third code of intelligence, sight. I had the thought, mother, I felt the emotion, and then I closed my eyes and I saw my mother. What is that image that you see? You can close your eyes right now and you can think the word mother. If you want, if you introduce the intention, you can see her. Where is that image? What is that image? That image is the spark of fire in your consciousness. And it's actually a visual experience on the holographic template of your own memory plate in that field of infinite possibilities. So the third code of intelligence is sight of fire. The combination of sound, touch, sight creates the experience of taste, the fourth code of intelligence. And the combination of sound, touch, sight, taste creates the experience of smell, the fifth code of intelligence. In other words, sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell, in that order, represent the sequential unfoldment of consciousness, of intelligence, as it interacts with its own self and manifests as form and phenomenon. These are codes of intelligence. And then sound is experienced objectively or projects itself objectively as space. Touch projects itself objectively as air. Sight projects itself objectively as light, as fire. Taste projects itself objectively as water. Smell projects itself objectively as earth. In other words, space, air, fire, water, and earth are the objective manifestations of these codes of intelligence that emerge from consciousness as it reverberates and vibrates within itself. And these are the five elements. In Sanskrit, they're called the Mahabhutas, the five great elements. And the codes of intelligence are called the Tanmatras, those disturbances in consciousness that create everything. Tonight we're going to talk about the doors of perception and how our senses, our sensory experience, can influence the healing process. A little background on that. Ayurveda is a consciousness-based medicine, which means that all the material expressions that we've been learning about, now we've been learning about Vata, Pitta, Kapha, everything that we do in terms of the physical body, the understanding of that is consciousness-based, because the physical body is just the expression of consciousness. The physical body is just a bundle of consciousness. What is consciousness? It's energy and information which is self-referral. Therefore, it's intelligence. And so, one of the things that I hope will happen with you, because it happened with me as I started to explore this, is that after a while, you don't even mentally think of the body as physical. Now, you think of the body as this bundle of consciousness, always. Start to look at it, start to think about it, start to examine it in your own awareness as a bundle of consciousness, which is constantly an ever in dynamic exchange with the universe, which is the ocean of consciousness. And there is this dynamic dance going on between your body and the universe all the time, and it's constantly transforming. Think in your mind that it's infinitely flexible, because consciousness is infinitely flexible. So in your mind, have that idea always that the physical body is not physical. Even though it appears to be physical, it's not physical. It's a bundle of consciousness, and consciousness in its very nature is infinitely flexible. There's a Vedic expression, infinite flexibility is the secret of immortality. Don't forget that. Infinite flexibility in consciousness. And of course, yoga tries to culture that infinite flexibility in the physical body. But ultimately, the body is not physical. So think about the infinite flexibility of consciousness. And the physical body just as an expression of that. When I see people, you know, somebody comes up to me and says, will you sign this book? Or, hello, how are you? It's almost automatic with me that I immediately, in my mind, you know, wonder, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, Vata, what combination? It's just automatic. So do that. You know, when I started learning Ayurveda, I used to sit with an Ayurvedic physician on the beach, and everybody that passed by would say, okay, now tell me. Yeah. And you know, and we would just look at people just walking by, and in our minds, Vata, Pitta, Kapha. And after a while, he would say, okay, now tell me what they're thinking. And you will be able to do that. Just pay attention to that. Because, you know, there's a certain pattern that goes with Vata, a certain pattern that goes with Pitta, a certain pattern that goes with Kapha, a certain kind of bodily movement, there's a certain kind of eye gesture, there's a certain kind of hand movement. But you'll be able to do that. But the first thing is, think that the body is a bundle of consciousness. Then think. When you encounter people, start thinking. What is that consciousness's expression in terms of these three factors that you've learned now about? And remember those three factors basically as movement, as transformation, as structure. Those are the three principles in creation, in all of creation. So, movement, transformation, structure. Whenever movement is exaggerated, that's vata is expressing itself. Whenever there's transformation, that's pitta expressing itself. And then there's structure, stability, that's kapha expressing itself. Those are the three principles through which consciousness operates. And third, when you look at people, and it becomes habit after a while, just go beyond what you're seeing. First you're seeing their physical body, then you're seeing their movements, their gestures, their speech. But there's a soul over there. Look at that. Look, feel the presence of the soul and the spirit, the animating life force. Here's somebody speaking to you. Ask yourself, who's speaking to me? Now, this is just the instrument of speech. This vocal cord is just the instrument of speech. These hand gestures are instruments. There's a presence there. There's a spirit there. So go look for it. Feel it. You start connecting with that. Also, when you look at someone, when you interact with someone, and I've started doing this only recently myself, but I'm telling you, it's very important to do because it really connects you to other people. Is as soon as you encounter someone, or if you're having an interaction with someone, deep inside your own self, just say, there's a soul there, there's a spirit here, and we are both equal. There's no one who's superior, there's no one who's inferior. On the level of spirit, we are coming as equals. And if you just acknowledge that inside you, you'll connect with that soul. You'll connect with that soul. Okay, so we started all our lives, you know, this present life that we have, we all started off as a little speck of information on DNA. That's what the material expression of soul is. It comes into this physical manifest world as a speck of information that has this little DNA in it. And then people start adding food to it, and then suddenly we have this physical body that goes around doing things, signing books and lectures and giving speeches. Essentially, consciousness manifests as a speck of information on DNA, and that speck of information keeps transforming itself. We are a dynamic bundle of information that's continuously and ever in transformation. And that transformation is brought about through experience. So, whatever is happening in our body is that original speck of information that was the soul's way of coming here with its karma, its memories and its desires. And then that transformation starts through experience. And we start to metabolize experience. You know, in medical school we were taught we metabolize food. Well, that's not the only thing we metabolize. We metabolize experience. Food is one of the experiences that we metabolize. And our physical body is nothing other than the metabolic end product of experiences. And there's a Vedic expression also for that. It says, if you want to know what your experiences were like in the past, then you can examine your body now. And if you want to know what your body will look like in the future, then you can examine your experiences now. You want to change your body, change your experience of life. You want to change the outcome of an illness, change experience. It's very important to understand that. We don't do that when we treat people. You know, we look at the disease and then we treat the disease. We interfere with the mechanism of the disease. But we never say to ourselves, You know, this disease came about as a result of experiences that were metabolized into this unhealthy expression. So if we want to reverse this illness, and then the whole concept of reversal doesn't even exist in modern medicine until recently, and we'll talk about heart disease, where there's for the first time some good insight that heart disease, and I'm talking about coronary artery disease, but coronary artery disease is now proven to be reversible. And just that has started a whole new kind of paradigm, in a sense, in modern medicine, not in Ayurveda. Ayurveda holds that diseases are reversible, because if there's a mechanism for it, then there's a mechanism in the reverse direction for it. Everything has its opposite. So one of our principles of spirit, for everything that exists, has the opposite also. So there is reversibility of disease into in the disease itself is the potentiality for complete balance and health. But that concept only recently appeared in Western medicine when people started documenting through angiography that coronary artery disease is reversible, and we will be talking about that. But what is even more important is that paradigm now is saying to us, well, if coronary artery disease is reversible, why not rheumatoid arthritis? Why not cancer? Why not multiple sclerosis? There's a mechanism, there should be a mechanism in the reverse direction. So that's a great breakthrough, just the fact that people have documented that coronary artery disease is reversible. Consciousness being a field of infinite flexibility, that for everything that exists and has a mechanism, there's a mechanism in the reverse direction. Start thinking like that. And what that mechanism is, it has to do with how we metabolize our experiences. And how do we, therefore, the next question is, how do we get experience? And in the physical world, of course, there are three levels of experience. There are experiences in the flesh, in the material body, the experiences in the world of emotion, and then there are experiences in the world of spirit. So in order to be truly holistic, we need to include all these three levels. Actually, we need to include four levels. The environment, the physical body, the subtle body, and the causal body. And we discussed these levels. So, first of all, the environment has to be healing. And what's the one thing you think that would be the most dangerous experience that would interfere with healing? Fear. What's the one thing that you think would be the most conducive to healing? Love. So those are the opposites, right? The opposite of fear is not hate. Hate is a desperate cry for love, actually. Every act of violence and every expression of hate is a desperate cry for love. The opposite of love is fear. Now what happens when you go to a hospital? What's the first experience you have? You feel afraid, yes. I mean, this is the tragedy that we have created environments where people are supposed to go to get healed, and the first experience they have as soon as they enter is fear. I mean, the hospital next to a prison is the most fearful place. Literally. And that's unfortunate that we have created that experience. It's not a healing environment. It's not a healing environment. You know, everything from simple things like the way the beepers work, to the way the code 99s work, the code red works, the way the sirens work, the uniforms, the machines, everything creates intimidation. So, if any of you who's ever going to be practicing, the first thing you have to do is you have to create an environment that is nurturing, that is nourishing, that gives a person the feeling that there is the energy of love here, real energy of love. So when you're encountering a patient and you're going to do body work on them, in your mind, just that little attitude that I am with the physical expression of divinity here, that will just create a quality in the environment that will take away the fear. Because most of our experiences are actually non-verbal. You don't have to say anything to a person. You remember the famous expression of Emerson? He says, "Who you are shouts so loudly in my ears, I cannot hear what you're saying." You don't have to say anything. If that's the inner attitude, it'll be reflected in the way you touch the patient, in the way you interact with the patient, in the way you massage, in the way you do anything. So the first ingredient is creating that healing environment. So in this section, what we are going to deal with is enhancing sensory perception. Also the idea that we can use our perception and our experiences through the five senses to create balance inside the body. I'd like to go back to the basic notion that our body is part of the body of the universe. That basic expression, as is the atom, so is the universe. As is the human body, so is the cosmic body. And everything that happens in the universe ultimately results in what we can call biological rhythms in the body. So as the earth moves on its own axis, we have the cycle of night and day, which results in very profound changes in our physiology. As the earth moves around the sun, the cycles of the seasons, the tides cause ebb and flow in our physiology. Even the relationship of the sun, earth and moon as they move in relation to each other results in biological cycles in us. 28-day cycles. The human menstrual cycle is a good example of that, but there are many other 28-day cycles. You can give an animal a certain dose of radiation at 4 o'clock in the morning, it may kill him. You give the same dose of radiation at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it may have a beneficial effect. The reason is the body has completely changed in that 12-hour period. So the body is always changing, and it is trying to synchronize its rhythms with the rhythms of the universe. So the signal that comes to us when we are out of harmony with the universal rhythm is the sense of discomfort, whether it's physical, emotional, intellectual. So all techniques that we're going to talk about now are to resynchronize the body's rhythms with the rhythms of the universe. And we do that through our five senses also. What is sensory experience other than taking in information from the universe and then matching it with the information inside this universe, which is my body? My body is a whole universe within itself. And sensory experience is just taking information from the universe outside my skin into the universe inside my skin and matching intelligence with intelligence. So let's start with sound. If we understand the quantum mechanical framework well, then we realize that the body is in fact nothing other than vibration. Vibrations in the unified field which result in the molecules that make up the body. So the body is ultimately just vibration. And the vibration of the body has to match the vibrations that make up the universe. And this matching or locking in or falling into a rhythmic relationship with, it's called entrainment. E-N-T-R-A-I-N-M-E-N-T. To entrain with means to establish a rhythmic relationship with something. Entrainment was first described by a physicist named Ichak Bentov. He did a very interesting experiment with clocks. He had five clocks. Each of them had a pendulum about the same size. He started the pendulums swinging at different times, not synchronously. But when he waited for about 4 hours or so, then what happened was the penduli gradually started swinging to the same rhythm. You can do this experiment any number of times and you'll find that even though you start the pendulums swinging at different times, after a while, they all start swinging to the same rhythm. And this phenomenon is called entrainment, falling into rhythmic relationship with each other. I'll give you another example of it. You take a baby and put it next to
its mother's breast. After a while, the baby's heart rate will entrain with the mother's heart rate. In other words, there'll be a rhythmic relationship between the two. It may not be the same rate, but there's a relationship. The baby's breathing will entrain with the mother's breathing also. And in fact, when you agree with somebody or disagree with somebody, what's happening is entrainment or falling out of entrainment. When I agree with you, because my thoughts are stimulating the same quantum fields in my awareness, then my breathing spontaneously matches your breathing, and so on. If you have a lot of women living together, you'll find that after a while, their menstrual cycles will entrain with each other. They'll all have their menstrual periods about the same time. So entrainment is a universal phenomenon, and it begins at the moment of conception. A baby's rhythms start entraining with cosmic rhythms through the physiology of the mother. And then they keep doing that right through pregnancy, and then even after a baby is born, it needs the proximity to its mother to have this entrainment continue. And the entrainment is through all the five senses. We can take any one of the senses and see how that happens. For example, sound can entrain our body's rhythms with universal rhythms. Music can do that also. Now, in the last few years, there's been a lot of research on this. It's become obvious that music can influence the heart rate of a person, brain waves, blood pressure, stomach contractions, levels of hormones that are associated with stress, with immunity, can be influenced through music. Also, there are secretions in our body known as endorphins, which are the body's natural opiates, which means the body's natural morphine-like compounds that are secreted when we listen to music that we enjoy. And therefore, when we are enjoying a certain piece of music, actually there are certain chemical changes occurring in the body. In fact, you can block the pleasure of music that a person gets by giving them an injection of something called Narcan, which is a narcotic antagonist, which means that when we are listening to music and enjoying it, then in fact we are generating some very powerful chemical messengers, the neuropeptides, and these are healing chemicals, they're the body's pharmacy. In the last few years, there's been some research which shows that different kinds of music will have different kinds of effects on the body. For example, high-pitched music will create a playful and happy mood, but also will speed up the metabolism. So high-pitched music, for example, would therefore be much more appropriate for a kapha type, because the kapha body type is hypometabolic, slow. If he hears high-pitched music, or if he hears music that has faster rhythm to it, that will increase his metabolism. On the other hand, low-pitched music slows down the body's metabolism. So it would be very useful, for example, in a vata type of person, to listen to a low-pitched music, also to music which has a slower rhythm to it. So slow and quiet music will bring about changes in the body that are the opposite of a hypermetabolic status. It's also been found, for example, that music played in post-surgical patients after surgery will decrease the need for pain medicines or for tranquilizers, and also hasten the recovery of a patient after surgery. And now music therapy is standardly used in various clinics to treat depression, migraine, anxiety, isolation and burn victims, also treatment of post-coronary patients, organ transplant patients, also after heart attacks. So this is already becoming standard therapy. The second thing is that all our experiences in the physical body are through our senses. So sensory stimulus is traditionally seen in Ayurveda as the key to healing. We approach the inner pharmacy through the senses. The senses are the gateway to the inner pharmacy. Now, Ayurveda has always held that there are two kinds of pharmacies in the universe. One is
our physical body, which is a pharmacy by itself. And then the second pharmacy is the world of plants. The world of plants and to some extent the world of minerals. Because the world of plants is also the physical body of spirit. And that's why all the herbal pharmacopoeia of Ayurveda, which you'll hear a lot about, is very profound. There's at least over 1,000 different herbal preparations with very clear, distinctive effects on the human body. And you'll learn about this. At least you'll get a good introduction to it. Modern science is showing that the human body creates homeostasis or healing. We have a healing system in us actually through powerful endogenous pharmacological products. So the human body makes some of the most significant wonder drugs that are available today. The so-called best drugs, the most effective, powerful drugs that modern medicine makes are called biologicals. And these biologicals are things like interferon, interleukins, other immunomodulators. So these are powerful anti-cancer drugs. The body makes imipramine, which is an antidepressant. The body makes all kinds of neuropeptides, which are very powerful drugs, literally. H2 receptor blockers, you name it, the human body can make it. It makes it at the right time when we are in the state of balance. Makes it at the right time, in the right dose. There are no side effects, and all the instructions are contained in the packaging. So the body has evolved over literally millions of years to this bundle of consciousness with formidable intelligence. In fact, the best drugs that the pharmaceutical industry is now getting a handle on, including receptor blockers, are made by the human body. And how does the body make them? In response to sensory stimulation. In response to stimulation through the five senses. It makes them in response to what's going on in our inner world of thought and feeling and emotion and desire and memory. That's a whole different area. But at this moment, I'm only talking about the physical body and the pharmacy in the physical body that responds to sensory stimulation. True healing can only happen when there's perfect alignment of elements and forces in the human body with elements and forces in the cosmic body. When there is perfect alignment, or we might say harmonious interaction of elements and forces in the physical body with the cosmic body. And this alignment, atonement, at-one-ment, coherence, entrainment, is what we are trying to achieve whenever we are bringing about the healing process. Because when we are totally tuned in to the cosmic rhythm, if you will, then the intelligence of nature flows through us with spontaneous and effortless ease. That's what we want, this effortless spontaneity of nature's intelligence flowing through our physical body. So one of the first most important things is also understanding of biological rhythms. We have a whole lecture on that, and we'll discuss biological rhythms and restoration of biological rhythms. But that is an important ingredient. The rhythms of the cosmos and the rhythms of the microcosm must be in alignment with each other. It's very important in treating cancer and very important in treating actually any chronic illness. So through sensory experience, that's also what we are trying to achieve, this restoration of biological rhythm. And this process, as I said, there are many names for it: at-one-ment, coherence, entrainment. Entrainment is a word that's frequently used. And entrainment, or this tendency for physical bodies to tune in with other physical bodies, is a well-known phenomenon in nature. Because one of our principles, again, of spirit, I mentioned one, everything contains its opposite, but there's another principle from last night, everything is vibration. And vibration tends to tune in to similar vibration. And this quality is called resonance. So any object in the universe, any object, has a certain vibration at which it resonates. And it begins first through sound. Because sound is vibration. Right now the sound I'm producing is the vibration of breath and therefore the vibration of atmosphere. In fact, there are references to the effect of sound in all the religious and spiritual traditions of the world. In the New Testament, you'll read the phrase where the Roman centurion says to Christ, he says, "Lord, I'm not worthy that thou should come under my roof, but say the word, speak the sound, and my soul shall be healed." And of course, in the Gospel of John, first there was the word was made into flesh. In Vedic literature, Nada Brahman, which says, Brahman creates through sound, through vibration. And in fact, there's a reference in the New Testament, according to Luke, where the mother of John the Baptist, when she sees the Virgin Mary and she's pregnant with John the Baptist, she says, "The babe in my womb leaped with joy when it heard the sound of your voice." We begin to respond to sound even before we are born, and we respond to the sounds of the mother's body, her what she hears, all the sounds she makes, what she speaks, the sounds in the environment. But even after we are born, we are constantly influenced by sound. In fact, the whole basis of Ayurveda is that we start out as pure consciousness, which is a field of infinite possibilities, which is pure silence. And then that silence, the pure consciousness, which is the field of infinite possibilities, silence, it interacts with its own self. And as it interacts with its own self, it begins to vibrate. And when it begins to vibrate, it produces sound. And sound, therefore, is the way consciousness becomes conscious. Or intelligence becomes intelligent. And a thought is nothing other than a sound in your consciousness. It's a vibration in that silence. And the thought is the final expression of what is called primordial sound, the first elemental vibrations in consciousness. And these elemental vibrations in consciousness are universal. They are not just human. They are the origins of language. So there are scientists that are called paleolinguistic anthropologists who study the origins of language, and paleolinguistic anthropologists inform us that as we look at the origins of language, no matter what the language is, Eastern, French, English, Latin, Sanskrit, Indo-Aryan languages, Chinese, as we start to go to their roots, we find the same sounds. These are the sounds of nature. Nature speaks in order to create. So first there was the word was made into flesh, is literal. Language is not a way of describing things. Language is a way of creating things. You create through language. You do not describe. You create through language. In fact, there is no thing that exists that doesn't have a word. If it doesn't have a word, it's not part of your experience. Even if it exists, if there's no word for it, it will not be part of your perceptual experience. Language creates. Remember that. So these sounds, universal sounds, are called primordial sounds. Primordial sounds have been used traditionally for healing in all the cultures of the world to bring about entrainment, remove the dissonant vibrations from the body and introduce the vibratory frequencies that bring about entrainment. And there are many kinds of primordial sounds. The first kind of primordial sound is the sound of the alphabet itself. The alphabet, which is universal, if you sound it out, whether it doesn't matter if you sound out the alphabet in English or in Greek or in Latin or in Hindi or in Sanskrit, the sound of the alphabet is the same. In fact, the word for the sounds of the alphabet in Sanskrit is Matrika, which means the mother of language. And there are two categories of primordial sounds in language, the vowels and the consonants. And the vowels are, of course, A, E, I, O, U in English. In Sanskrit, A, E, E, U, U, A, I, O, U, M, Aha. You don't have to remember that. Just remember A, E, I, O, U. So right now I want to take you through a couple of little techniques that you can incorporate into your healing repertoire. Okay, and these have to do with using the sounds of the alphabet. The first sound is A, okay? Take a deep breath. And as you exhale, make the sound ah. Okay, now we'll do it once again. This time, we'll make it really loudly and we'll keep saying it till we run out of breath. Ah. This is a great pranayama. It's a great breathing exercise too. So take a deep breath again, and this time as you're making it, close your eyes and feel your body. Feel the vibrations. Introduce the sound into your body, the vibration into your body. This time, what we are going to do is, as we make the sound, we close the eyes, we'll mentally have attention on some part of the body. And we'll have the intention for healing. Now, this is very subtle. What I mean, attention on some part of the body, just put your, very effortlessly put your attention on that part of the body. It's not a concentration. Okay? Wiggle your toes, please. That's attention and intention, right there. As soon as you did that, your attention went to your toes, and then you had the intention, wiggling. So it's so simple that it hardly needs explanation. You don't think, heal, heal, heal. Okay? Because that's too mental. Too mental. We want to work from the level of spirit. So this time when you make the sound, just put your attention on some part of the body where you want healing to occur. And then don't think, healing, healing, healing. The attention is there and the intention is implied, okay? The more subtle, the better. Just like when you wiggle your toes, you don't say wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Okay? You just do it. You have the intention. So this time, put your attention on some part of your body that you want healing to occur. And if you can't decide where to do that because you're already healed, put it on your heart. We all need some emotional healing. Okay? This is a great place to put your attention on. Because the heart is not just a pump, it's the seat of emotions as well. So choose a spot in your body, and this time close your eyes and make that sound with the attention and intention going to that part of the body. Now the same thing, whichever part you chose, choose that same part again. Let's say you directed the sound to your heart, or if you have a neck spasm and you directed it there, or whatever, you have an ulcer, you directed it to your stomach. Stay with that, and this time we'll do the same process with the sound A. Okay? Instead of saying A, we'll say A. And now we'll use the sound of the letter E. Again, take a deep breath. E. And now we'll use the sound of the letter O. O. Remember, each time we are directing it to that same part of the body with the attention and intention for healing and transformation. Now, the sound of the letter U. U. Okay, what I'd like you to do is, for the next few days, when you're in the bathroom or taking a walk, try these five sounds. A, A, E, O, U. And keep directing them to one part and then another part and then another part. And in a few days, decide which one of these five sounds, A, A, E, O, U, feels good inside your body. Which one of these creates a feeling of energy? Which one of these creates a vibration where you direct it? You know, if you're directing it to your solar plexus, do you feel some sensation there? Do you feel some vibration? If you direct it to your heart, do you feel some resonance there? Do you feel some vibration there? So try each one of these and see which one feels more energizing, which one is easy to direct, which one creates sensation, vibration. And then choose that, adopt it, make it your personal primordial sound of the alphabet. And then practice with that, directing it to different parts of the body with the intention of healing. Once you've done that for a few days, then no longer make the sound. Close your eyes and hear the sound in your consciousness, in the subtle body. So now let's do that for a moment. What we'll do is, we'll take these same sounds and just close your eyes, and when I say start, then start with the sound ah and direct it to some part of your body, hearing it now. So again, close your eyes and listen to the sound, ah, the way we were doing it, and direct it to some part of your body. And now do that with A. And with E. And with O. Please open your eyes. So, within a few days or a few weeks, what you should be able to experience is that you can sit down any time during the day, and for a minute or 2 minutes, you can take one of these sounds. Don't try all of them. You know, you need to adopt one and become just proficient at using that one. So, out of these five, just use one. Then start mentally directing the sound to different parts of the body with that attention and intention of healing. So let's say your heart is speeding up and you want to slow it down, as in somebody who has tachycardia, you can actually break an arrhythmia with this just by doing this. So one of the things that you can combine it with is the experience of smell. This process is called neuroassociative conditioning. You train your nervous system to associate one sensory experience with another sensory experience. I'll discuss how smell works in a few minutes. But for now, if you, let's say, combine a smell with the ability to mentally direct a sound. And how do you do that? Well, let's say you're directing the sound to your heart, mentally, okay? And you want to slow it down. I'm just using that right now as the example. Now, what you would want to do is direct mentally the sound to your heart, and at the same time, you would take a vata balancing smell, because speeding up of the heart is a vata problem, right? It's too much movement. You would take a vata balancing smell and you would smell it as you're mentally directing that sound. And after a while, what would happen is your limbic system will, every time it smells that, it would automatically associate with that sound and automatically associate it with the intention of slowing the heart rate down. So after a while, you wouldn't even have to think the whole process. You could take just the smell and smell it and you'd slow the heart rate down. Or let's say the problem is an ulcer, you do the same thing. You're directing the sound there, whatever the sound is, ooh. You're directing the sound there mentally, but at the same time you're smelling something with the ulcer. What kind of a problem is an ulcer? Pitta. So you're taking a cooling smell, which is pitta balancing at the same time. So after a while, then every time you smell that, the ulcer will cool down, etc., etc. This is called neuroassociative conditioning. Okay, so that's how we use the sounds of the vowels. And remember, choose one, not all.